name's Eric Lyle. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date, September 18th, 1985. Had a home group, had a sponsor, and here we are. Mildly agitated Thursday. I think that's what I've come to the conclusion. Dovetails nicely in with 10 and 11, let me tell you that much. This has been an interesting few weeks getting up here and sharing, and before I get into what we're going to talk about here, I'm going to do a little reading tonight. So 10 talks a little bit about those four things we need to watch for. So the way my morning started yesterday at about 5:30, we're having some construction done at our home, so things are kind of in disarray, and I'm grateful for that I have a home that I can have construction done in. And my darling rock star wife is down on the treadmill with the local news at about 100 decibels. I'm trying to communicate something to her, and I did not pause when agitated. And we exchanged some pleasantries, and off to work I went. And at noon, I called her at lunch and said, there was a couple text messages that were somewhat loving in between there, but I called her at lunch and said, I really have to amend, our discussion. And I went at her, man. It's like, shut that thing off for a second. It's depressing anyways. I really went out there. But, it was really about selfishness and fear. And I knew that when it was happening. So I can tell you, after 34 years, that stuff is there. Those directions for us to try to grow and awaken. The last 2 days, if I was a big league ball player, I'd be batting 500. How's that? That's pretty good. But when it comes to the 10th step, that's not so great, okay? I try to go out into my day and be useful, loving to my fellows. And more often than not, I can get through the day and my interactions with people in a loving space, okay? That didn't happen yesterday, and it didn't happen about an hour and 15 minutes ago when I was at work. I know today, because I had an opportunity to pause, and I'm like, nope, I'm not pausing. Which is really scary when I sit back and think about that later on, but it happens. And immediately after, I said what I had to say to one of my staff. I looked at him and said, we need to go to my office and have a talk. And I sat him down and amended that harm. And, he didn't deserve to have those things said to him. There were some things that needed to be discussed. But ultimately, it's about my fear and selfishness, man. This guy doesn't respect who I am. Blah, 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 and maybe he doesn't, but that doesn't mean I can treat him that way. So, I don't like having to do that, but I know I need to do that. Not only because I want to try to correct that harm, because nobody's deserving of that today, but I want to try to move past that and not treat people that way. So anyhow, it's a marked contrast from the way I was when I walked in here, because I thought it was everybody else's fault. That's why I felt the way I did. It's what you people were doing to me, and the fact of the matter was, you people weren't doing anything to me. I was doing it to myself, and I was doing it to you, and my perception of everything was delusional. Nothing was true that I saw in my eyes when I was drinking. And you take away the booze and add a little bit of God in some time, and that delusion's gone. It really is today. I know the truth in all things, and sometimes I choose not to do it. Actually, a friend of mine called me on the way here and says, yeah, it's easy to fear and forget. I'm like, man, you got that right. You nailed that one. So anyways, we're going to, last week I talked about 8 and 9, and What's interesting, you know, I got a new guy, and actually had a beautiful story to share with me today. He's got 55 days, and somebody he used to drink with and knew from the rooms that had been sober called me and talked to him in a year or so. And the guy's on a run, man. He's been drunk for 3 months. And my guy, he called me up and he says, "Eric, you know, I felt useful for the first time in 55 days that I could share my experience up to this point. But I also understood exactly how he feels." And I'm like, "Dude, 2 days before Christmas when you called me from detox, I understood exactly how you felt. And it's been over 3 decades since I took a drink or got high. You know, I understand that. I got a lot of empathy for somebody that's still out there doing their thing, man. Because that's an ugly way to live." But he put a smile on my face. I actually gave him a call briefly before I came in here to tell him thank you for sharing that with me. So I'm going to read a little bit. You know, after the promises, which we're not going to go through, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. There's another one of those adjectives, I guess that would be, vigorously. Doesn't say we sit back and think about this. We vigorously commenced on this way of living. You know, it's like the guy that says, "Yeah, I'll do 6 and 7 after I watch the Cavs." I said, "No, you know, we're going to do this as soon as I drop you off, you know." Because I'm an alcoholic, and man, I'll work an angle. I'm lazy. You know, I was lazy when I was getting loaded. I wanted the easier, softer way every time. And, you know, in the irony of it, this is the easier, softer way. I haven't had to put a lot of effort into this stuff. I really haven't. Compared to drinking, it's hard work, man. Yeah, at least it was for me. We entered into the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. So I'm given a task there to keep doing this as long as I'm alive. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if they have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. So I did that stuff yesterday. I talked to somebody, actually somebody I sponsored. I happen to work with them. I'm fortunate enough to have this person in my life. And it's not like we hang out in each other's office and talk about the 12 steps all day long. But, you know, when he shows up at mine or I show up in his and say off topic, and he knows what we're going to talk about. And we discussed the treadmill incident yesterday. But I need to recognize it, you know, and there's been very few things after my 4th and 5th step that I actually had an inventory on paper. One of them, I shared that with you when I talked about my 4th step, that is a resentment I realized I had towards my mother after she passed. And I did attend, I believe I live these last 3 steps. I've never went back and started at step 1 and went through 9 again. I mean, the 10th step's there for us to do an inventory. That's what it is. You know, we're doing it. We're looking at those 4 things. We're sharing it with somebody and going to God. Same thing we do in 4 and 5. So I had to write this resentment on paper, though, and then I got together with my sponsor. We discussed it. The last 2 sentences, though, that we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. Now, in my experience, you know, others we can help aren't necessarily in the rooms. You know, that could be the next situation, the next question I have to answer at work, the next instructions I got to give to somebody. I can either do that from the perspective of love or fear. That's the only 2 places I really can go today. You know, love is God, fear is me. It's that. I need to keep things simple. You know, I am neither highly intelligent nor have an education beyond high school. I'm not a smart guy, so I have to really bring this thing down to a level that works for me. And for me, there's only 2 ways I can be today: loving or fearful. I mean, fear encompasses all these other things that we talk about, in my opinion, in my experience. So, you know, if I'm being loving, then I can go through my day and be useful. And that takes on many different forms. You know, in a few years ago, wasn't that long ago, 3-4 years ago, I stopped to get a haircut, and a young lady that I, you know, ended up with was crying. She had tears in her eyes. And I said, "What's wrong?" And she said, she told me this experience with her client before me, and it was terrible, and she was told she should find another profession, and all this ugly stuff. And I looked at her and I said, "Here's what we're going to do. You're going to breathe a little bit. Breathe in and out with me, okay?" I looked at her square in the eyes and I said, "You know what? You're going to cut my hair. You're going to do a good job. I'm going to thank you and I'm going to give you a tip. You do not deserve to be treated like that. And try not to believe what that woman said about you." And I walked out, and I didn't think twice about saying that, because that's love. And I walked out of there and I thought, where did that come from? That's not the nature of Eric Lyle. It came from you people and the God of my understanding and doing this stuff and making those decisions based on self and fear less and less often. It got me to the point where I can be more loving and fearful today and go through the day that way. That had nothing to do with me. It's got everything to do with the steps, you people of God. So, you know, it's like those tolerances of the person in the 12 items or less line, and they got 22, and I've counted them. And then I think, well, you really have nothing to do tonight other than to go home and tie some flies. You know, I don't know what this person's going through. Maybe they're taking care of an ill family member. They just worked a 12-hour shift at the hospital. The gal happened to be in scrubs. I don't know what's going on in her life. And maybe she's just not thinking real clear right now. You know, allow her the grace that's been afforded you. So I try to live that way. And it happens more often than not. But some days I don't. And I shared some of that with you. It goes on to talk, "And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. By this time, sanity will have returned." And that's that, for me, that's that sanity that I can somehow take a drink with impunity. You know, that thought that this time it's going to be different. That kind of sanity's returned and has been replaced with this love thing. "We will seldom be interested in liquor. If we're tempted, we recoil as if from a hot flame. React sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. When you're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor we are afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition." And that's the crux of that paragraph. You know, I got to maintain my spiritual condition through this path and some spiritual practice in addition to the 12 steps, mainly furthering my 11-step experience. "It's easy to let up on our spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent upon maintenance of our spiritual condition." You know, once again, I'm reminded, I need to do this daily. "Every day is a day when we must carry out the vision of God's will in all our activities. How best can I serve thee? Thy will be done, not mine. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will." And for, you know, my first couple of years, I really, my will, God's will, what is that today? I know, man. You know, yesterday morning, if the treadmill was not God's will, that was all Eric, you know. And again, I was conscious of it, you know. Gets to step 11, suggest prayer and meditation. So, you know, I go through the day and I'm conscious of these things. And I clean them up then, if my fear gets in the way. So then we go into step 11, and really, you know, sometimes I think step 11, actually, I do step 11 in the morning so I can go through the day and not have to check myself, you know, when those situations come up. I need step 11. And, you know, I talk to my new guys, and they're like, well, I don't know how to meditate. I don't know how to pray. I says, listen, just start doing some simple things. You know, see if you can sit still and just look at your day ahead for 2 minutes. And then the next week, 5 minutes. And just try to get still. And not necessarily, you know, my experience is I do some of that, you know, Eastern kind of meditation. But the meditation they're talking about in here is more about looking at our day ahead. And how we can bring God into it, and you know, how we can be useful to our fellows. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer, you know, and I pray every day. But the first part of it, you know, in the evening, tonight I'm going to go home, and I actually meditate on my day. Is there anything else I need to clean up? Could I have done it better? In making this review, it says, you know, I'm my worst enemy when it comes to beating myself up when I fall short of the ideal. You know, I think we have a tendency to do that. I've finally gotten to the point where that doesn't happen often. And it says something in here, when we're looking at this day, what did we do right? What could have we done better? And if there's something that needs cleaned up and an amends, we need to do that. And we ask for forgiveness, our higher power, and the person. How can I do this better? How can I correct this? But it also says, and it's easy for me to forget this, but we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. If I go there, if I become remorse and morbid about something I did, like this incident with my wife, I'm thinking about me, and I'm not thinking about somebody else. I need to have my thoughts on somebody else and not me. You know? Upon awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We should consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking to be divorced from self-pity, dishonesty, or self-seeking motives. Fear, too, for me. I always include fear in there. Under these conditions, we employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane. So, for me, you know, I try to spend... I read the Daily Reflections. You know, I read the 24-hour book until that came out. I read that every day. I read something out of the big book, a paragraph or two or a page or two out of the text. And I got one or two other meditation books I kind of rotate through yearly. And a dear friend got me a new one at Christmas this year, and I'm really enjoying it. So I do that reading, and then I sit down for about 10 minutes. I sit there and think about my day ahead. You know, and then I pray. So I spend about 20 to 30 minutes in the morning doing this. And this is how it goes. I'm an early riser, but once in a while I'll hit snooze. And the next thing I know, I'm doing drive-by God, you know, for a couple of days in a row. And I equate that, you know, I love good coffee. And I like the whole thing about getting some whole beans and grinding it, brewing it, or French pressing it. You know, that's the full deal. You know, for me, 20 or 30 minutes in step 11 is the full deal. You know, drive by God is like going to the Hortons and getting a cup of dark roast. You know, it's easy and it's convenient, but it doesn't work very well for me. I want the espresso I made. And it's the same way with God. I mean, that's an analogy that I understand. You know, it's vital for me, and I know it when I'm not doing it. Okay, I'm conscious of that. So I tried to carve out that time, and I know how vital it is for me to go through the day and be relatively peaceful. You know, it's And that's the great thing with working with new guys, you know, sponsoring the new guys. You know, they may be in treatment still, and they've got a task for a few hours a day, and they call you after you get out of work, and they say, well, you know, I say, how much, you know, what'd you do this morning, your prayer and meditation? Oh, I did this, I did that. It was about 5 minutes. It's okay. And then they say, well, I didn't have time. I'm like, what do you mean you didn't have time? They're like, oh, you know, I slept till, you know, 5 minutes before we had to get up, and have breakfast and go to task. And what'd you do this out? You know, so after they get done telling me this nonsense, I lay out my day, starting at 4:30, and concluding at dinner at 9 o'clock, because I had to go to the women's prison in Cambridge Springs with this other dude. I says, after I got home, I knew that I had gotten up at 4:30 so I could do this meditation stuff. So how much do you really want this? You know, how much do you really want it? And it's nothing that my sponsor didn't tell me, because I spent 2 minutes on it in the beginning too. I had to learn to pray and meditate. But that's that experience that we pass on. You know, how much do you want to get out of this? You know, I heard the guy talk about it once, Rich B. from Delaware. He spoke at the Erie Spring Conference 1 year. He talked about, well, how free do you want to be? I mean, you can have hamburger or you can have filet. What do you want? You know? I want it all. I want to walk through life relatively peaceful, even when things get weird. You know, I mean, you can't sidestep the weird stuff that life throws at you. You just can't, man. It happens. You know, but if I can get to the other side of that without harming anybody and relatively peaceful, that's pretty nice. That's a pretty nice way to live. It goes on to start talking about our day. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought or decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answer comes after we have tried this for a while. What used to be a hunch or an occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still and experienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired all the times. I wasn't in the beginning, but that was an excuse. And at one point, my sponsor called me on that. You know, after a few years, he's like, you know what? It's time to move to a different, you know, you need to shift in your awakening here. You're kind of just there. What are you going to do different? And that's when I started adding readings and more time. 3-4 years sober, 5 years sober. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more in the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. I really do go through the day and rely on that intuition and inspiration that I receive from the energy of, you know, God and the fellowship. You know, it's not often that I have indecision about what's next. You know, sometimes I make the wrong decision, but more often than not, I intuitively know how to handle this situation, whatever it may be. You know, I'm asked dozens of questions a day. God, you know, some days it's relentless, but I usually have the answer that's best for the company, for lack of a better way to characterize that. But it talks down here, though, we ask especially for freedom from self-will, and are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. I have to remember that. I can't ask my higher power to direct something that's only going to benefit me. Because if I stay in that, and I'm not saying all people can't, for me, I can't go there. Because it's starting to become a little bit more selfish in a real subtle level. I mean, this stuff, I mean, these couple things I shared with you that happened in the last couple days were the very overt. I mean, they were clearly obvious. Fear today for me is much more subtle, as is selfishness. And I'm going to touch on that in a minute. And then it goes on, you know, if circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join in some morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. You know, and there's a couple other suggestions. One thing I wanted to point out, and I've always, I grew up in an evangelical Christian home. My folks were very devoted to their faith and their God, and it was a wonderful way to be raised. I mean, they taught me a lot of morals and values. I drifted away from that, and my spiritual beliefs today encompass a lot of different philosophies, okay? But when I first came in the rooms, I would hear people share at meetings about some experiences with religious leaders when they were younger. And I always kind of cringed, even though I didn't, that wasn't my experience. But I cringed because, I try to think about the newcomer walking in here. And if they have a faith of a particular denomination, and they come into a room of Alcoholics Anonymous and hear somebody bashing their faith, especially, you know how raw we are when we show up here, we may say, this isn't the place for me. Because I have some friends that were deeply devoted to their faith that couldn't stop getting loaded. You know, I mean, they were doing the deal in their church 2-3 times a week, but they couldn't stay sober. And had they come in and heard somebody bashing their particular faith or denomination, I don't know if they would have wanted to stay here. So I think it's dangerous when we go there. And I'm not pointing fingers at people. That's just kind of a general observation. So I have to be careful of that. It says these people can be useful to us in this step, in this experience, in our awakening. Make use of what they have to offer. I think that's a wonderful part in a book, you know, even though I don't belong to a particular faith. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated and doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show. Humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, thy will be done. I did not do that, and I knew I wasn't doing that the last couple of days in those instances. And this is how I try to live today, and I do more often than not. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily. If we are not burning up energy foolishly, jeez, as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. When I'm getting loaded, I'm spending a lot of energy trying to get loaded. It was a job for me. When you work with a new guy that just beat themselves up for a while, and you say, damn, that's a rough way to live, man. I'm glad I don't... That's work. That really is. This is easy. And I just love this next paragraph. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way that we have just outlined. And then it goes on, you know, faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. That's how I live my life today. And I try to not dwell on the mistakes like the last couple of days, those moments when I was fearful and selfish. And, you know, certainly pray and talk to somebody about it, and want to move to better things. And earlier on, I mentioned about, you know, the fear and selfishness today is I don't have resentments. I truly don't. And the dishonesty thing, that's another one that can be subtle at times. The longer you're sober, I mean, dishonesty. What I thought was honest at 5 years sober, and in some situation, I would know it's not honest today. But a few years ago, well, shoot, it's almost 10 years ago now, when I think about it. Penny and I were thinking about taking our daughter for a trip to Belize or somewhere for a graduation present from high school. And then we started looking at colleges, and, you know, we're going back and forth on this thing, and she got into a school and it's going to be really expensive. I said, well, we could probably make it work. And she says, no, I don't think that would be responsible. Now, this is the accountant, you know. She's not an accountant as a profession, but she's our household accountant, thank goodness, you know. You know, she does a really good job at that. And I'm like, and then I reluctantly agreed, yeah, we probably, that wouldn't be responsible as for spending that kind of money. But then for the next couple of days, I'm being kind of a knucklehead to her in a kind of real subtle way, but I am. And I'm sitting there on a Sunday morning doing this, the 11 step thing. And I'm like, the reason why you're kind of being this way to her is because you're not going to get to go bone fishing in Belize for a couple of days. That's what this is all about. It was totally self-centered and selfish. So I went and made an amends to her, and she says, well, I didn't really notice. I said, believe me, I've been a little bit edgy to you in a kind of overt way. And she says, oh, okay. You know, but I recognized it, that I was not right in right relationship with her, or my God for that matter, because I wasn't going to go fishing in the salt water that spring. Now, that's something I had become accustomed to, and I still do it. But it was real subtle. In the first day or so, I didn't notice it. And she didn't, obviously. But then I realized that, you know what? I got a little edge going here. What's that all about? So that when I say things are subtle for me today, that's more often than not how it is. Not like this nonsense the last couple of days, man. It was like I had both barrels loaded, and I knew it. And I was ready to pull the trigger. So, you know, I continue to try to practice this thing. You know, this God connectedness and this spiritual awakening. I mean, the goal of this, the steps, is for us to have a spiritual awakening, you know. So, I mean, that obsession was removed earlier on. Probably when I was, probably by the time I was at 8 and 9, you know, that overwhelming obsession to drink was removed. You know, I've had the thought of a drink once or twice since then. I had one, and I've shared this with a couple people. I don't know if I've talked about this, but probably 12 years ago, I'm camped on one of the most beautiful places in the world, and there's nothing but tan sand, saltwater flats as far as you can see, with three of my fishing buddies and a guide. And these guys know I don't drink, and one of them really knows my story. Okay, I'm 25 years sober, and we get done fishing, had one of the best days of fishing I've had in my life, and they're sitting there drinking pineapple or coconut rum and pineapple juice. And I've fished with these guys for years, and I don't think twice about them drinking. That's been removed from me. I looked at them and I thought, I wonder if I can have one of them. And just as quick, I recognized how insane that thought was. And I played the tape, the 30-second tape, because we're 15 miles from the mainland, and there's one flat skiff. And I'm going to steal it, because we're going to run out of booze, because they only got a quarter of this stuff. We're there for two more days. And I'm going to try to get to that mainland, and if I am successful, which I doubt it would have been, I would break into the liquor store in that little village. And about 2 days later, I'm either going to jail in the Bahamas or they're deporting me. And that whole story played out in about 30 seconds. And I walked down the shore and got on my knees and said a prayer of thanks. You know, the thought was gone. And I thought about what I was grateful for. And I went back and spent a glorious evening with these guys. You know, but for a minute, man, it's like, maybe I can. That's a crazy thought. And I got up that morning and did my prayer and meditation. You know, it talks in there about booze being a subtle foe, and it really doesn't dovetail a lot into this other than I did my meditation that morning, but it was a thought. It wasn't an obsession, and I immediately processed that and did what I needed to do to be happy. And we had a wonderful evening, so... if the microphone's working, I guess we got to do that.
Thanks, Eric. So who's got a question for Eric?
Eric, Dave, alcoholic. What's with the treadmill?
She was on it walking with the TV at like 90 decibels when I'm trying to have a conversation with her. And she wasn't getting it. Like, hit mute, turn it off, you know? This is going on for a couple minutes, so finally I snapped. I snapped and said a couple expletives, and the mute button got hit, and we had this short, concise conversation for about 30 seconds, and I left without a kiss, or I love you. And, you know, that's not us, and that's not me, man. I was selfish. I wanted her to respond to me, and, you know, doesn't she realize that I'm trying to talk to her and go to work? That's what's going on in my brain. You know, it's totally self, really. I mean, it's funny, but it's just nuts. You know, it's just one of those things. So that's the treadmill incident.
Thanks.
There used to be shotgun incidents. So this is it's much more subtle today.
All right, who's next?
Yeah, and just so you know, don't let Penny, any of you that know my wife, her mild demeanor fool you. She was just as crazy as I was when she drank. Believe me. Chaz saw us when we showed up. We were just out of our minds, man. It was, yeah. Oh, her talk's much more spiritual. She told me that. Yeah, the rebuttal. Kevin always asks a question.
Thanks, Eric. I really appreciated you coming out. And this is a big commitment. And steps 10 and 11, you describe perfectly how you do things and how your routine has evolved into what it is today. When you're working with somebody and you share that your process with them is like openly as you are here like that, and let them kind of develop what they're doing, and do you kind of like throw stuff that might help them a little bit farther down the road for their own spirituality? I know when you first start, it is a process, but I know for me it was, you know, books were given to me, little hints were given to me, like breadcrumbs that got me to the point that where I could like fly on my own.
Yeah, I do. I mean, we usually talk about it at length. And I share with them what I did in the beginning, which was the 24-hour book and reading something out of the big book. That's what I did in the beginning. And I also ask them, okay, do you have any formal religious training? Or do you attend a church? I mean, I want to know that stuff. And I would never tell somebody to do something or not to do it, especially from a more structured, formal thing. That's between them and their God. I mean, that's going to be a part of their spiritual awakening if they choose to continue that path. I'm not an arbiter of that. You know, I show them some things that I started to read, you know, a little 2 years, 3 years, 5 years down the road. I've shared with them some spiritual texts that I read pretty regularly and follow some of those tenets. But I also let them know that it's, you know, it's your awakening and the God of your understanding. It's your higher power. But this is what I've done. And you know what? Always the text. I mean, that's a given. But I really like the daily reflections, especially for the newer guys, because it's there, it's pretty concise. There's always a really good message there on a way to live sober today. And more often than not, it usually touches base on a step and or a tradition. But I encourage them to seek their own path, and I show them some things that I've done, you know. I want to know where they're at with that. You know, I want to know if there's some prejudices there, too. just because I think I need that information. You know, it's kind of like, okay, what was your deal? You know, when I and we'll talk about this next week, but I want to know their life history. Not, you know, every nook and cranny, but, you know, what were your parents like? How was your family life? That kind of thing. But invariably, that leads to, okay, did you have any kind of formal religious training or belong to a church or whatever? I think that's vital for sponsorship to know that stuff. And then to share my experience going through that, if that answers your question.
Eric, thank you. Steve, alcoholic. You spoke about work and having to call somebody in. Right now at work, I'm training someone, and the guy's just not getting it. And I'm, like, at wit's end with this person. Any advice? I don't want to see the guy lose his job, but he has no idea what's going on. And I'm trying to...
I think it's something we could maybe talk with briefly after the meeting, rather than in this forum, but, you know, pause.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
You've been pausing a lot, I think.
Yeah.
You're at that point where you're ready to be really agitated and...
Yeah, and go off. And
go off,
I'm trying not to...
Yeah, I appreciate what you're saying, but I think maybe after the meeting we could discuss that.
All right,
thanks.
Anyone else? All right. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you.